The Food and Drug Administration has approved a new active ingredient for sunscreens sold in the U.S. for the first time in nearly 30 years. So how is it different from the stuff we already slather on our skin? You're tuned to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to discuss what we need to know is cosmetic chemist and adjunct instructor of cosmetic science at the University of Cincinnati, Kelly Dobos. Welcome back, Kelly.
Lucy, it's great to be here.
It's great to have you. What is this new ingredient and how is it different from the active ingredients in sunscreens that are available now?
Sure. So bimetrazinol is the newly approved active ingredient, and it's been used in other regions like Asia and Europe for about 2 decades. And you may have looked at other sunscreen labels, the name, and I had to write this down because even I can't say it easily. Bisethylhexyloxyphenylmethoxyphenyltriazine is the ingredient's name that is used in Europe and other regions. Here in the United States, it's going to be bimetrazinol on the label. And what's unique about bimetrazinol is that it absorbs in both UVA and UVB regions, and it's also very stable. In the United States, prior to this time, the active ingredient avobenzone was really our only UVA protective sunscreen ingredient, and it's not very photostable, so that means it breaks down in sunlight. So bimetrazinol has that, you know, those benefits of being broad spectrum itself, very stable, and it's also a large molecule, meaning that it doesn't penetrate the skin to a great extent, so it has a really great safety profile as well.
Okay, so explain the difference between UVA and UVB rays.
Okay, so the radiation that is coming from the sun is divided up into a spectrum. We call it the electromagnetic spectrum. And the rays that reach us here on your Earth are primarily the UVB and UVA rays. UVB rays are the ones that are responsible for giving you a sunburn. And that's why most sunscreens historically have focused on that SPF number. SPF only measures that UVB protection. And it was what we could see happening, right? You can definitely see and feel a sunburn. The UVA rays are deeper penetrating, and those are the ones that really, you know, are contributing to advanced skin aging and skin cancer. But we don't see that same visible reddening effect on the skin. So we didn't learn about the effects of UVA until much later, and the importance of including that broad spectrum protection in sunscreens.
Okay. You mentioned that the U.S. has had kind of one active ingredient that addresses those UVA rays. What's been the problem with that? Can it be irritating for some people?
So I should clarify that the zinc oxide does have some UVA protection as well. That's just kind of a different category of sunscreen active. That is an inorganic chemistry that's a particle, a white particle. So there is some UVA protection there. But when it comes to the synthetic organic chemicals, it was avobenzone. And avobenzone will break down with exposure to sunlight. So you need to use other stabilizing chemicals with it. And it's a little bit more tricky to formulate with. So the bimetrazinol is an improvement over that chemical.
Okay. Well, we are talking about the newly approved active ingredient for sunscreen in the U.S. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Okay, I have seen bimetrazinol, also abbreviated to BEMT. Is that okay to call it BEMT, or is that something different?
No, absolutely. That's a way of shortening it and making it much easier to remember.
Okay, good. Well, I'm going to say that then. Yeah. Hey, if once this new the sunscreen containing BEMT is available here in the U.S., if people want to use it, how often would that have to be reapplied? I know with the sunscreens we have now, I think the recommendation is every couple of hours.
Right. It's still going to have the same recommendation of reapply every 2 hours. And that's because we're constantly sweating, or if you're going swimming, you're going to be degrading that sunscreen film on your skin. So you're still going to have to reapply every two hours. That'll stay the same.
Okay. So it's not some magical thing that can still protect your skin if you get sweaty and that kind of stuff.
Right.
Okay. Okay. You mentioned that it's a bigger molecule. Does that mean it's less likely less likely to be absorbed into the bloodstream. That seems to be a concern for some people with the current sunscreen ingredients, right?
Right. And bimetrizinol is actually one of the, you know, of these existing sunscreen ingredients we have, bimetrizinol has gone through a new type of testing that the FDA is requiring for sunscreen ingredients called a maximal usage trial, which we refer to as an MUST. And that maximal usage trial, they actually put large amounts of sunscreen on people multiple times in a day and then measure the amount of sunscreen active ingredient that ended up in their bloodstream. And because of the size of that molecule, it is not able to penetrate the skin to any appreciable amount. And so it's really been through that toxicological testing to prove that it has a high degree of safety.
So how does it feel when you apply it?
So because bimetrizinol is broad spectrum and it's photostable in itself, and you're not going to have to rely on these other stabilizers and adding more oily ingredients to the formula, you can create a more elegant feeling sunscreen. And that's extremely important because we know that when it comes to consumer use of sunscreen, ensuring that they reapply, that they want to reapply, and that they're using the correct amounts, that elegance is really important. And so this will allow us to create some more elegant sunscreens that hopefully consumers will actually enjoy using.
Yeah. And elegant, that's such a fancy word. Does that mean it's just not as slimy?
Right. We say cosmetic elegance when we talk about the aesthetics of a formula. And I know I'm particularly excited about this as well because, I try to convince everyone to use sunscreen on a daily basis. And that's one of the biggest complaints of my significant other is that he hates the way sunscreens feel.
How many people actually do use sunscreen? You mentioned that you try to convince everybody to use it. I know dermatologists say sunscreen, sunscreen, sunscreen. But how many people actually do use it out there?
You know, I don't know any specific numbers. I'd have to look a little deeper into that. But I think when it comes to daily use versus beach products, I think there's probably a significant divide. And many people still think of sunscreens as only, you know, if they know they're going to be outdoors for a significant amount of time or they're going to a beach setting. But I also do see a lot of more younger folks today applying sunscreen daily, especially on our faces, because, you know, our faces are constantly exposed to UV.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you mentioned zinc oxide before. I always think of zinc oxide as this like white, mushy stuff you put on your nose when you were a kid to try to make sure that didn't get a terrible sunburn. This has got to be, I mean, it sounds like it's a much better user experience than zinc oxide. How does it compare chemically?
So bimetrizinol is going to be transparent on the skin, unlike zinc oxide, which is, again, that white particle. It's zinc oxide and titanium dioxide are also pigments used in cosmetic makeup. So they provide opacity to the formulas. As a matter of fact, titanium dioxide is the primary opacifier in makeup for foundation. So although we have, you know, significant improvements in those types of formulations, it's still hard to really reduce that white cast. So bimetrizinol, you know, being something that is soluble and going to give you transparency on the skin is going to be an improvement in that area as well.
Will that be an improvement when, if you're a person who wears makeup on your face and you're told to reapply, will this new BEMT sunscreen ingredient make that easier? Will that be a better process, or will it be magical in makeup that'll last longer if it's included in there as a sunscreen?
I think it's still best to apply a sunscreen as a separate product underneath your makeup. And that's because it can be really hard to get, you know, sunscreen active ingredients into the makeup formulation and still have it perform very well as a makeup product as well. It can be hard to reapply, though, sunscreen to your face at multiple times a day. So, you know, it's always still important to keep in mind, you know, don't go actively seeking sun exposure. Wear hats and sunglasses, and seek shade when you can as well, too. And sometimes, you know, powders aren't necessarily the best sunscreen type of formulas because consumers don't apply enough, but they can also be helpful as maybe a touch-up during the day.
Okay. We do have a caller on the line. Hi, Ruth. Thanks so much for calling. What's your question?
I'm wondering if this new sunscreen is reef safe.
That's a great question. I know Hawaii banned some active ingredients in sunscreen in 2017 because of concerns about coral reefs. How does this new ingredient stack up environmentally?
Right. So reef safety is a really important topic. Of course, we all care about the environmental effects of the choices we make in our consumer products. But it's important to keep in mind that those original studies about reef safety of sunscreen ingredients focused on single ingredients and exposures at levels that were really not relevant to how sunscreen might wash off in an ocean environment. So unfortunately, I think the reef safety claim is, you know, has become challenging to cosmetic and sunscreen development because of these notions that single ingredients are problematic. Most formulas that claim reef safety have not actually been tested on that whole finished formula for reef safety. They're just relying on absence of specific ingredients. And so I think the science is still developing on that, whether or not reef safety is really more of a marketing concept or actually something that is a true concern with cosmetic formulations and sunscreens. I would highly recommend looking at the Personal Care Products Council sunscreen information on their website as well to look at some of the information about reef safety and whether or not it really is something that we would be concerned about for these ingredients.
So do you know if specific studies related to reef safety have been done for bimetrazinol?
I would have to look on the biodegradability of bimetrazinol, and I believe there's some data out there on whether or not it's readily biodegrades in the environment. And again, one thing to consider too is that sunscreens are often formulated with polymers to help prolong the amount of time the sunscreen stays on your skin, because we don't want it to wash off so readily when you're out swimming. So the actual amount of sunscreen that is washing off into the water is something that's very low to begin with as well. So, okay.
Well, thanks for that question, Ruth, and thank you for listening. We sure appreciate it. We got a question from Janelle. Will this new ingredient have any adverse effects on people with eczema, especially in children? Do you know if there have been studies on that, Kelly?
I don't know if there's been any specific studies related to eczema. I know that the U.S. FDA and their GRAS determination, which is generally recognized as safe and effective for this ingredient, determined because of the excellent safety profile of bimetrazinol that it did not need further studies for safety in children particularly. But when it comes to infants under the age of 6 months, it's always recommended to focus on shade rather than sunscreens because of the age and maturity of the skin in infants.
Okay. Kelly, why did it take so long for the FDA to approve this in the U.S. when other countries have been using this in sunscreen for years and years?
Wow. Well, this is, I've been following this saga for my entire career. And, it really kind of goes back to the fact that when the first sunscreen rules were being written, this is in the 1970s, we were really, I wasn't working on sunscreens back then. I'm not that old. But sunscreens were really focused on delivering that SPF value, which was UVA protection. And then as we get into, the 90s, we start realizing UVA protection is really going to be important as well. So there was this effort to develop new ingredients that also had UVA protection. So what sunscreens were doing, the role they played was shifting. And then sunscreens were also shifting from beach products to daily wear products. Many people are applying sunscreen daily these days. So the FDA, throughout the course of trying to develop all these rules, were looking at how sunscreen usage was shifting and then changing how they determined what safety meant for a sunscreen. So in some ways, the goalposts were shifting on what companies had to do to determine the safety of improve the safety of these ingredients. And that becomes really time consuming and expensive. And so that takes you know, a long time and the commitment for a manufacturer of the ingredients to go through with all of it. So I think, you know, the goalposts shifted and then there were different government regulations trying to move things forward. But it's just really taken a long time to get there to that final safety determination.
Yeah. You've mentioned SPF a few times, and I think a lot of people recognize that on their sunscreen package for, you know, how strong that is to avoid those sunburns like you were talking about. Will this new sunscreen with this new ingredient, will it have a particular SPF level, or does that change depending on the formulation?
That'll change depending on the formulation and the combination of active ingredients that are used in the product. But most products on the market today are going to start with a SPF of 30. That's kind of the bar of recommendation for dermatologists and sun safety experts. So I expect you'll see most at SPF 30 with broad spectrum protection as well, because that's the important part. Keep in mind, SPF only tells you about UVA. Those broad spectrum words will tell you that SPF is UVB, and broad spectrum will tell you that it's also got UVA protection.
Yeah, and the UVA, those are the nasty rays that cause skin cancer and wrinkles and all kinds of stuff we don't want. Yeah. When will this new stuff be available in the U.S.?
So I believe that it is around the first week of August when the rule will really come into effect. And manufacturers of these product sunscreens are drugs, so they are subject to specific rules of the U.S. FDA, including the fact that the manufacturers of that finished sunscreen will have to register the product with the U.S. FDA. And so at that point, we've kind of missed the window for beach products for this year, for summer. So I really expect, you know, maybe you'll see some face care products this year, maybe some beach products by the end of the year. But I think next year will be the year we really see the full force of this new ingredient in the market for beach products as well.
Mm-hmm. When this new product is available, whether it's in some products later this year or really in full force next year, because it's a broad spectrum product, will you be able to use this all by itself, or will you need to combine this with other types of protection?
Yeah, we'll still combine it with other types of sunscreen active ingredients to really give a full broad spectrum picture of the sunscreen, because each of those active ingredients might absorb in a different area of that UVA and UVB spectrum. So we want to try and get absorption as broadest as we can across those entire spectrums.
Mm-hmm. I learned while doing my homework for our conversation that there is an anti-sunscreen movement. Do you know what those concerns are about?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of misinformation and sometimes even disinformation about sunscreen ingredients out there. And, you know, it's often, you know, used to maybe market other products or other supplements or things of that nature. And I think it kind of preys on consumer fears or takes a particular piece of research out of context. I've certainly seen that with some studies where they've taken a piece of information about a single ingredient, tested an extremely, irrelevant scenario, and then tried to relate it to what's happening in consumer products. But the truth is that sunscreens are public health products. Skin cancer is a really serious concern, with high numbers of people. I think it's 1 in 7 Americans will have skin cancer by the time we're 70. That's, due to the fact that we're all living longer as well. And there's, a lot of safety information on these sunscreens going back to this bimetrizinal ingredient. It really went through the gauntlet of safety testing to prove that it should be listed. So I think it's important to listen to the science and scientific consensus when it comes to sunscreen.
Yeah. Well, in the minute and a half or so I have left, I'm going to ask you a term paper question. And that is, tell me a little bit about our history with sunscreen in this country. I mean, when I was a kid in the 70s and 80s, it was all about getting as tan as you could. People were using baby oil to soak up that sun instead of sunscreen to protect our skin. When did we start to get smart about sunscreen?
Yeah, that's a really interesting kind of story about sunscreens and the history. I've been doing a little research. I'm going to give a little plug to the Lloyd Library here in Cincinnati, which has a fantastic library and a lot of information about cosmetics. And sunscreens really kind of started coming into the discussion in the 1920s, 1930s. And people were realizing, you know, as I had more time and more leisure time going to beaches and enjoying, you know, vacations. There's a story that it was Coco Chanel who was on vacation and came back with she didn't mean to get a tan, but she returned home from a vacation with a tan. And it became sort of popular culture as, you know, showing that you had the time to do these leisurely vacations. And so she's attributed how true that story is. We don't necessarily know, but sunscreen started being developed then, and they were marketed with phrases to say, like, to help you tan and not burn, because they were these UVA protective materials. And I think that tan, not burn went all the way up until the 1970s as people focused on tanning so much instead of protection at the time.
Yeah. And we've learned a lot since then about so many things. Well, I've been talking with cosmetic chemist and adjunct instructor of cosmetic science at the University of Cincinnati, Kelly Dobos. Thank you so much for your time today, Kelly. This has been fascinating.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director today is Stephen Baum. And Rob Fetters composed our theme music. I'm Lucy May. Thank you so much for listening.